We are back with episode 282 of the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What is up, my friends? Guys, I am so pumped and excited to bring you this masterclass with Anna Kelly. And I want to start this introduction a little different than I've done in the past. Anna is a Amazon best-selling author, speaker, investor, trainer, rock star mom, wife, everything in between, right? I mean, her story is truly, truly inspiring, as you guys are about to hear. And rather than kind of go through her bio, I want to read a couple of paragraphs from a book that she co-authored. And I want to kind of start the podcast with this, and we're going to pivot into the actual masterclass interview, where we're really going to talk about how she built a multi-million dollar rental portfolio part-time. And that's not even the impressive part, although that's very impressive, but it's more where she's come from and all the challenges that she has had to overcome in order to even get to where she is nothing short of amazing. And like I said, it really is inspiring. That's a word you guys are going to hear throughout the podcast. But I want to start by reading a couple paragraphs here, and just bear with me a couple of minutes here before I get Anna on the podcast. Okay, here we go. Last year, this is Anna. This is part of the book that Anna co-authored called Resilience, and I'm going to start reading part of the book here. So check this out. Last year, I hit my goal of acquiring $5 million in rental real estate, and I have a $6.5 million apartment complex under contract today. Our rental income has significantly exceeded the six-figure income from my job, and after many years of hard work and determination, I can finally retire. I am now focused on growing our real estate business with larger multifamily properties and helping others to do the same. While I have not given my children a quote-unquote stay-at-home mom, I'm proud that I am leaving with them a legacy of a mom willing to do whatever it takes to provide for them. Through our journey, they have seen that we can accomplish anything through hard work, integrity, determination, perseverance, grit, resilience, hope, faith, and a refusal to give up. They know what it looks like to work together to build something, and they have importance and the importance of giving and investing instead of wasting money. Finally, they have been taught to treat people from every walk of life with compassion, kindness, and respect as we strive to provide nicer, safer housing to the tenants that I had growing up. I'm almost done, guys. Looking back, God has used all of the difficult experiences and what seemed like unanswered prayers to build me brick by brick, day by day, year by year, into a better, stronger person. I realize now that all of my years in the corporate world have given me the skills, wisdom, and confidence I need to run my real estate business today. I've learned that perceived failures and setbacks are actually lessons and stepping stones for you to walk on as you climb the stairway to where God is taking you. I'm going to end it there. There's so much wisdom and power in what Anna shares on today's podcast that with that, I'm going to transition right into it.
Anna, how are you? It's Alex, round two, right? So second time's a charm here. How are you?
Awesome. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So guys, sorry, Anna and I had actually started speaking and then my internet got shut down here. So I'm going to recap what we just spoke about, but I want to be fully transparent with everybody listening. Anna and I have never spoken before. We have never met. This is actually the first time that we're meeting and speaking. And the reason I reached out to her, because usually, guys, you know that I have a relationship where I know the people that I have on the podcast. Number one, I saw Anna's name pop up over and over and over on social media. And then I started following her and we became friends on Facebook. And I started like kind of, you know, just following along with her content. The people she was associating with are people that I know, like, and respect and trust. And so I reached out to Anna and I said, I see what you're doing. It looks like you're crushing. I am looking to connect with more successful women. And it seemed like there was an alignment of core values, even though mm-hmm. we don't really know each other. And we have a lot of mutual friends in the industry. So I reached out to her. Little did I know I was going to be in for something that usually I don't come on the show already inspired. I leave the show inspired. But I read your story and I was blown away by everything you have had to overcome to get to where you are. And I think that would be mm-hmm. a perfect place to kind of start. I touched on some of it in the intro, Anna, but I want you to kind of fill in the gaps and, you know, maybe in the, over the course of the next 5 minutes, your story is so important to give people context as to how you got to where you are today. And guys, what we're going to talk about is how Anna built a multi-million dollar rental portfolio part-time. So that's hard enough to do without all the challenges that she has had to overcome. So why don't we kind of start there? Like, give people a little bit of an idea of where you've come from and everything you had to endure and overcome.
Sure. I'm very blessed to be able to be here. And thank you so much for having me and excited to share with your listeners. So I shared with you before we did the podcast, I was recently in a book published by Kyle Wilson called Resilience, Turning Your Setback into a Comeback. And when I started to just kind of think through my backstory and all the things that got me kind of to where I am today and why I think I'm successful, I really just started going, you know, way back to my childhood and looking at, you know, what I thought my hopes and dreams were for my life and kind of the challenges that I've had to overcome. And, you know, when you're going through difficulties at any phase in your life, whether it's in your childhood or, you know, as a young adult or as a family, loss of jobs and things like that, it's hard. And I think the people that are most successful in life and in business are the people that truly do have resilience and grit and determination to change their situation and to make the best of life. And so looking back, I've seen that, you know, I did have a lot of obstacles to overcome, like many of us. And those things just made me driven and determined to do better and to have a future, you know, better future for myself than what I had as a kid and to offer that for my children. And so kind of going way back, you know, as a child, I am a product of a divorce. So my parents divorced when I was very young, 3 or 4. And my mother was in a very abusive marriage. So I had a very abusive stepfather. We kind of moved in the middle of the night from one town to another. And I really grew up the oldest of 6 kids with a single mom who worked 2 jobs to make ends meet. And we lived in what I would call the projects of San Antonio, Texas. So we lived in a really nice, wealthy area. But we were the Section 8 apartments, the only ones kind of there. And my mom was a leasing agent in the apartment complex. So kind of grew up in apartments and knew what that was like, that type of living. And my mom started working 2 jobs when I was 9 years old in order to make ends meet. You know, we were on food stamps. We stood in line for WIC. I've been in battered women's shelters because my mother's been through several abusive marriages. And that was really difficult. So at 9 years old, I started watching my siblings at night by myself. And it was just really scary. Yeah. But it forced me to have to grow up and to be responsible at a really young age. And I just kind of learned that, you know, my glasses at the time were, I can never depend on a man to take care of me. I got to take care of myself. I've got to be responsible for taking care of everybody else. And I'm going to have to just be successful in life so that I wouldn't end up a statistic like everybody else I kind of saw, you know, in our apartment. So that gave me, I think, the grit and the resilience and the responsibility from a very young age to kind of have a mindset of I need to be successful. I need to make more money so that I don't live in poverty. And I need to really be able to make a life for myself, regardless of who I'm ever with, so that if I was ever in an abusive situation, I wouldn't be stuck like my mom was, if that makes sense.
It does. And you know, when I read your story and I listened to you speak now, I'm going to use the word inspired, because I'm fortunate that I didn't have to go through 80% of what you went through, you know. Having said that, I think without that experience, who knows where you'd be today, right? Like, I'm sure you're successful in your own right, but I think that, you know, what you experienced really shaped you into the person you are. It developed your mindset. It gave you that grit, that perseverance. What was it? Did you just feel like you always had that? Because there's so many people that come from that kind of background and have abusive family members and you know, are raised in drug infested families and things of that nature that just never come out on the other end of it. What was it about your situation that you felt was able to help you turn a corner when others don't go through half of that and they just get sucked into the wrong crowd or the wrong situation and they're just never able to like turn their life around?
Sure. I think a couple of things, and I've really thought through this over the years, and especially in preparing to write this book. But number one, I just feel very blessed, you know, by the grace of God, I was able to come, you know, out the other end of it. And I just always had this peace that everything would be okay, and that I just had to learn from the things that I was seeing. And part of that is probably just part of my makeup. But also my dad and my stepmother had a very different, you know, lifestyle. And so, they were very involved in our lives, but they lived, you know, several hours away. So they really couldn't do too much. But when I was, you know, visiting with them and whatnot, and eventually I moved in with them at the age of 15, because I, knew that as difficult as it was to leave my mother and my siblings, and that guilt and responsibility I had for leaving them in that situation, when I had an opportunity to move in with my dad and my stepmother, who were in a much better situation, was really debilitating. I struggled with the guilt of leaving that behind, but I just knew, you know, I saw two lives. I saw the lives of my mom's situation that she really couldn't control. She was a good mother to us. She tried to provide for us. And then I saw the lives of a together family unit with two people that were working and two people that didn't have that cycle of drugs and alcohol and abuse affecting them. Sure. And so being able to kind of see both of those things from a very young age, I knew if I remove myself from that type of environment and make choices to live, to live in a way to be most successful, to really put God first, to put other people first, and to stay away from the drugs and the alcohol and the things that often keep people in that situation, that I would do better. And so I moved in with my stepmother and my father, and they gave me a lot of guidance at that young age as a teenager into what I needed to do to be successful and how I could make sure that I didn't make some of the same mistakes maybe that my mother had made that kind of got us in those situations. But they just helped me to think wisely about every action that I took having long-lasting consequences, and that you needed to really be driven and determined to learn from the mistakes of others and to move forward and make the best of yourself. And so having that wisdom and guidance, I think, really helped me, people that could pour into me and show me another way.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And I think aside from that wisdom and guidance that you received from them, and thank God for them, you kind of said this indirectly.
Yes.
I think your faith in God is what really ultimately pulled you out on the other end, you know, because I connect with people, unfortunately, that just were never able to turn the corner, and they don't they don't believe, you know, they're not believers, or they lack that faith.
Right.
I'm not here to say you have to believe it, whatever your situation is or whatever you believe. But my sense is, you know, for you, that faith was huge, you know, as you were growing up.
And absolutely.
Yeah. Amazing. So
yeah, absolutely. And I just always felt this peace, you know. I'm a Christian, and I was saved at the age of six. And I just knew that God was for me, and that if I lived a life that honored him, that he would bless me and take care of me. So I just had that assurance of faith, even at a very young age, that really has helped me, because life has been, you know, there's ups and downs in everyone's lives. And I think when you know, and you have that assurance that everything's going to be okay, you just have to do your best to live life in a way that honors the Lord and that is a blessing to others, then he's going to take care of you. You know, there's a scripture that talks about a man kind of preparing our path, but the Lord directing our steps. And I feel like that's kind of the story of my life. Many times I don't deserve the things that have happened, or I look back and I think, man, I could have made a mess of this, or messes were going on all around me. But thank God for his grace, he's pulled me through that and allowed me to become a stronger person because of some of the adversity that I've gone through, I think.
So powerful. I'd love to credit the speaker that I heard this from, but I heard not too long ago, our mess is our message.
And
when I hear your story, that's the first quote or thing that I heard that I think about. And hopefully that is, hopefully that acts as inspiration for others, not just myself, that again, you've been through so much. I haven't had to go through half of what you've gone through and where you are today. Before we kind of pivot and transition into how you built this super successful, massive multi-million dollar rental portfolio, do you have any like any words of advice for people that just find themselves in the gutter, faced with whatever they could possibly be faced with, whether it's health challenges, relationship challenges, on the verge of bankruptcy. I mean, who knows? There's thousands and thousands of people that listen to this. We just never know who we're going to reach and touch. And so do you have any words of wisdom that you got from, you know, your stepmom and the people around you that loved you and cared for you, that maybe you can kind of pass along to them?
Sure. You know, one, and I won't spend too much time on this for those of your listeners who are not believers, but truly having a foundation of, you know, when you know the Lord and you realize how valuable you are to Him, you have this faith that everything's going to be okay. And so when I struggled with, why is this happening to me? Where am I? What good can come out of this? You don't feel like having faith. You don't feel like things are going to go better. You feel like God is not there, and that God doesn't care. And so for me, focusing on scripture that tells me and reminds me of who we are and how much God loves us and how faithful He is what is the number one most important thing that has kept me positive and moving forward more than anything I could share from a philosophical or business standpoint. So with that said, I think the other thing, it's interesting. A lot of studies have been done on what makes people successful. So, you know, you could be the valedictorian of your class and end up really not successful. You can be super smart and have a lot of book knowledge and a lot of understanding of how things work. You can know everything you can about flipping or your business or whatever it is. But if you don't have grit and determination, you will not succeed. And sometimes the people that are the most successful are really not the smartest, but they just have this inner strength of grit that no matter what happens, no matter what goes on, I'm going to be positive. I'm going to make the most of the opportunity and find a way over the hurdle. And so I think just change, you know, you really got to speak to yourself, you know, not like crazy. I'm talking to myself all day long, but when you don't feel it and you can't see past the tree that you're looking at to see the greater forest and the good that can come out of things, we tend to kind of get in a woe is me pity party. This is never going to get better. It's going to get hopeless. And in Texas, and my family really always said, you know, you can be in the mud, but don't wallow in it. Yes. And I think that that's been kind of a phrase that I've resonated with and that I've remembered that comes back over and over again. Okay, this is bad, but I'm not going to wallow in it, because if you wallow in it, you're getting it all over you and it consumes you in your mindset. You're not able to see clearly and think clearly. So as much as people can, I think some of it comes naturally that you're positive or resilient, but you can train yourself not to think negatively. You can train yourself not to wallow in a situation and to say, okay, here's a bad situation, but what can I do to overcome it? Get creative about how you can use it to benefit you. Yes. And even ask yourself, how can you become a stronger person through this such that it can turn into one of your biggest blessings, even though at the time it seems like one of the biggest challenges in your life. So I think those are probably the two most important factors.
So well said, Anna. And I think just to piggyback on that before we really start talking about just, you know, your core business in real estate, is a couple of things that have worked for me is whenever I'm in the dumps or something bad happened, whatever it might be, I immediately turn to gratitude. Not only my faith, yes, but what am I grateful for? And it just changed your state. You know, I think I learned that from Tony Robbins years ago. And really your support system. That's why I'm always encouraging people to surround yourself with those that are going to love and uplift you and that are going to
absolutely
you or keep you accountable, and give yourself a couple of minutes to feel whatever it is you want to feel bad about yourself, but then try to snap out of it. Easier said than done, but if you just focus on your attitude, lean on your support system and on your faith, if you're a believer, I think that's the formula to really turn things around. And it ends up turning your day around, which ends up turning your week, your month, and your life around.
Absolutely.
So I don't want to oversimplify it, but it kind of is, you know? Having said that, how in the world did you build this huge multifamily rental portfolio part-time? Like, I realize that's a very general, non-specific question, but what's the starting point? Because I think a lot of people listening to this are wholesalers. They're fix and flip investors. They're in the single family space and they're building successful single family businesses, but they might realize that, hey, in the future, I see myself in commercial. right? Whether it's multifamily, storage, whatever it might be. Or I know I need to build wealth and buy assets that generate passive income. Talk about how you got involved in that space and how people can start to take their existing businesses and go in that direction if they choose, or at least be intentional about building that wealth.
Sure. So as part of my, you know, being very determined to succeed, early on when I graduated college, I went to work for Bank of America, where I was a private banker. And so I had a lot of clients who, you know, I was learning how to tell people with a lot of money. We basically had the top 10% of the wealth in our department, where we were going after them and teaching them how to invest in stocks, bonds, mutual fund, you know, funds, insurance products, and things like that. And one of the interesting things that I learned is that most of my clients already knew well more about what I was trying to tell them to do than I did. And most of them had developed wealth, or at least extended their wealth through real estate. And so I really didn't know anybody that owned anything other than their single family home, just because of, you know, how I grew up. And it kind of piqued my interest in, you know, one day, when I work hard enough and I make enough money and I save enough money, I'm going to own real estate. So that's where I kind of started thinking about it. And then that was about 1998 to 1999. And I had a baby. I got married in 2000. I had a baby in 2003. And as driven as I had been, you know, I won a lot of awards for, you know, various different things and, that I had done. And I was very driven to, you know, climb that corporate ladder, have a successful life, you know, give my children better. When I had my first child and I held him in my arms, all I could think of is I want to be the best mom in the world. I don't care about the money. I don't care if it takes me 20 years to grow wealth. I just want to be home with my babies. I want to teach them and pour into them, you know, spiritually, and make sure that they're, you know, strong individuals. And all of my desire to climb to the top and succeed financially completely went out the window. So around that time, my husband and I had gotten married, and he had, like many people do today, you know, six-figure college debt. Oh, yeah. And came out of school, you know, working as an associate chiropractor for someone, making like $25,000 a year, you know, with a school loan five times that. So I didn't have the option to stay home, even if I wanted to. So, you know, I just kind of resigned myself that I'll put him in the best daycare possible. You know, we'll stay close, but I'm going to maybe figure out something else I can do on the side where I can stay home and still cover our mortgage and our car payment and our school loan and all that stuff. Right. So right around that time, HGTV came out with all the Flip This House shows, and I watched a zillion episodes. You know, every episode I'm like, this is so cool. You can make $40,000 or $50,000 a flip. All I got to do is make two a year and I'm done, you know? Right. So obviously they very simplify the process and it's very unrealistic. But we decided to flip a house. So we bought a house, and we did it all the wrong ways. You know, we didn't know any better. I went and got a traditional mortgage on this house we were going to flip, and I hired contractors I really didn't know that said they could do it. They weren't licensed or legal, and, you know, they did an okay job, but we had to get a lot of things kind of fixed. And I bought in a horrible location. We way over improved the property, and it set for like 9 months.
Were you in a C-class area, D-class area? Like, was it a war zone or?
No. So actually, this was an area of Houston called the Heights. And the Heights was an old area that used to have a lot of money. And like in many cities, you know, the areas closer to downtown start to go down and dilapidate. And they were basically being regentrified. So lots of people were coming in and redoing these old Victorians to their original standards. And, you know, selling them for $300,000 or $400,000, where one that wasn't redone might be, you know, 80 to 90. So there was a lot of growth coming back into the Heights, primarily because Houston is so big and the traffic is so terrible. It takes people an average of an hour to hour and a half to get to work. So people left the suburbs and were like, we're coming back into downtown. And, you know, I really didn't know at the time what I didn't know. We didn't know that we were really about to hit the worst period, recessionary period in the United States since the Great Depression. You know, housing sales had started to slow. We just kind of bought in the wrong time. Yeah. And the street that we were on a major builder came and knocked down like half of a block of homes and started building bigger and nicer for cheaper than what we could sell, you know, one that we over-improved that was Victorian. So we learned a ton of lessons, but it sat on the market for a year from the time we bought it, 9 months of holding costs. And during that time, Alex, my husband actually lost his job. So I had two mortgages, a new baby, school loan, car loans, and one income. And it was one of those times in my life I thought, what is happening and how could this go any worse, you know? And finally, we sold it. We paid off my husband's school loan. We lived on basically one income and paid off the $120,000 in a few years. And we're debt-free. And we decided to move to Pennsylvania, which is where we are now, to start his business. And we started it with $750,000 in debt. So, you know, people talk about real estate being expensive if they got to go buy a course or, you know, hire a mentor. Try starting another business. It's much more expensive to go into business for yourself and much more risky. So I had worked for AIG Life Insurance Company for several years when we decided to move to Pennsylvania. And we knew that we were starting off with $750,000 in debt to start his business. And we knew that my job might be a 3 to 6 month trial. Okay. So we really didn't have much money. We had sold our home and we had some cash. And we decided, hey, instead of leasing space, which was really expensive, let's buy a building. And this building that we looked at in our little small town, most of the downtown buildings have an office on the bottom and have apartments on the top. And we found a building that had two tenants on top and then four garages in the back with another tenant on top. So when I crunched the numbers and figured it out, I said, you know, it would be much cheaper for us to just buy this building and we'll have tenants. And I had had a tenant in Texas, so I kind of knew, hey, it's some extra income. How hard can it be to be a landlord, you know? So we bought this building. And I really just had tenants out of necessity. So at that point, I was thinking of rental income just as something to help cover my expenses, which is one of the great benefits of it. You know, no matter if you have one or if you have 100, any little bit of passive income that you're making helps offset your daily expenses. Yep. And then a year later, and because of that, and I also didn't know if I was going to keep my job, I bought a 4-unit apartment building. So we downsized from about a 3,200 square foot home to about a 700 to 800 square foot little apartment with two kids. I had two at this time and had three tenants knocking on our door every day. Can you fix this? Can you fix that? But it covered all of our expenses. And so I knew if I lost my job, if the temporary thing didn't work out, at least we could cover all of our living expenses, housing expenses, and the mortgage payment on my husband's business. So that's how I got started. And as luck would have it, or unluck would have it, some people might think, you know, this was in 07 and 08, and then the market crashed. Yeah. And when that happened, because I worked for AIG, it's very complicated why, but they had, you know, trillions of dollars in assets, but not enough liquidity. And AIG was one of the largest mortgage insurers in the country. And it also issued insurance on some of these big companies that went down. So they had to very quickly, within 72 hours, come up with a couple $1 billion to pay out to keep the financial industry from continuing to collapse. Mm-hmm. And since I worked for them, you know, my stock was like $101. And in a couple days, it was 43 cents. So I lost a significant amount of my 401k. I thought, I'm losing my job. What are we going to do? And at that point, I just decided I better buy another rental property because that's all I kind of knew to bring in additional property. So I borrowed from my 401k and I bought another 4-unit. And I thought, well, at least if I lose my job until I can find another 6-figure job, you know, from rural Pennsylvania, which I didn't think was very likely, I'll at least have 12 renters paying me rents and help kind of cover cost of food and cost of rents. So that's really how I started having tenants.
Incredible. Let me ask you, what for the people that are out there that have, because there's different schools of thought when it comes to leveraging debt to buy assets, specifically real estate.
Sure.
Right? There's mm-hmm. so many different schools of thought as far as that's concerned. It sounds like, did you tap into your 401k and did you get, you know, it sounds like you got traditional financing to buy the commercial building. I don't know how you financed it, but I'm assuming it was traditional financing.
So it was interesting. You know, obviously times are different now than they were in 2007. But because I had a strong 6-figure income, even though my husband was kind of starting out and money was really easy to get in 2007. I went to a small commercial lender, a regional bank that keeps their own loans in-house. And through kind of my husband's network of people that lived here, they gave me 90% financing on the building, and they let me put 10% on a 5.9 fixed credit card for life. So I bought the commercial building with zero money out of pocket. And because I knew it was 5.9%, rates at that time were like 8.5, 8.75. So it was much cheaper for me to use the credit card. And we had followed Dave Ramsey's advice to have no debt before. And we lived very tight, and we did not have debt other than our mortgages and eventually a car, which wasn't quite Dave Ramsey. But I didn't like using very much debt. But I always felt like with business and real estate, as long as it's not consumable debt where I'm just buying myself beautiful home, you know, beautiful home and clothes and things that aren't going to last or they're going to devalue.
Yeah,
then I'll use debt in order to buy assets that are going to make me money. So I am not a no debt person. I do not advocate too much of the wrong kind or over leveraging debt. But I think debt is a very powerful tool and a horrible master. So you don't want to go over your head. But it's a very powerful tool because it allows you to basically purchase at least 5 times more assets than if you were to go in and pay cash. Yeah. And so for someone like myself that didn't have cash, I just barely had enough for, you know, savings in case my husband's business didn't do well. I really depended on the banks. And the 4-unit we bought with FHA, you know, owner occupied, 3.5% down. And then the second one we bought, it was borrowing from my 401k. And I like mortgage debt. I don't like credit card debt or line of credit debt for short term things. Unless it's, you know, a single flip at a time or something like that, unless you're using other people's money. But I do like mortgage debt, and I think it's very powerful as long as the rates are decent.
Okay. When you look back, would you have done anything different as it relates to how you got started in real estate, knowing what you know now, or would you have gone about it the same exact way?
I think I would have... at the point where I bought the third 4-unit when the market was crashing, I had the idea. I was following, you know, REI Club and Bigger Pockets and some things like that. And I had the idea of, hey, I have 12 tenants. I could go in and buy more rental properties, or I could flip more properties. And at the time, because I was conservative and with my background kind of in private banking and finance, I really didn't want to, where we were in the economy with the financial collapse, I didn't want to borrow too much. And I didn't think I could because I wasn't sure if I'd have a job. So I wish that I had known about private money and about, you know, networking clubs and groups, and that I could have leveraged other people instead of just thinking, I don't have money, so I can't do this. So I did go to a seminar with someone that told me, you know, you can buy big apartment complexes with none of your own money, and you don't have to have good credit. And you just have to pool your money with other people. Mm-hmm. And the person that put it on, turns out I hired her for coaching, and I thought that was my ticket. I was going to buy one big apartment complex, replace my income and be home and, you know, just figure out what I wanted to do from there. And it turned out the woman was a fraud. She ended up going to prison, and because I trusted her and I almost went to work for her and left AIG because of where we were in the market. I really got jaded from working with other people. I just thought, you know what, if this is the world of real estate with people with no integrity that are going to, you know, put on seminars and coach you, but not really do anything, I don't want any part of it. And so it was one of those moments, one of the hardest moments in our lives. And it's very complicated of why it became that. But just with no hope that I was going to be able to provide for our family and have money, and thinking that people working with other people was not what I was going to do, I really put my investing on hold for another 4.5 years. I never bought another property. So I just kept working full time, handling the tenants that we did have, fixing them up. I tried to go to banks to cash out equity, and they wouldn't allow it. You know, they were still kind of skittish as to allowing you to take equity loans on rentals. And the biggest mistake that I made is at that point, I didn't have that grit and that resilience. You know, I just thought, you know, eventually maybe things will turn around, and I didn't leverage other people's money and working with other people. And that was the biggest mistake that I did, is I let myself get jaded and down and didn't get creative and see, hey, can I still do something in real estate if this one thing that I've tried, you know, hasn't gone well. So thankfully I came out of that. And I had a light bulb moment and go, you know, I can do this. I've got a lot of equity built up in what I have, and I can use that to start buying more properties. And there was some networking events that were starting in my area. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go to one or two. And the very first one I went resulted in me buying an off-market multifamily property. So that's kind of, you know, 5 years ago is when I really got serious about making a business out of rentals and making six figures in passive rental income so that I could realize my long-term dream of being a stay-at-home mom with my kids.
Oh, that's incredible. So this was, I'm curious, what was the turning point for you, Anna, in 2014 that got you out of that rut where you said, I'm gonna make a business out of this and I'm going to realize my long-term goal of having passive income so I can stay at home with my kids?
I think, you know, I had four children by this time. So I have four kids. The last one was born in 2009, right about the time that I kind of got jaded in real estate. And, you know, just working full time, my husband's a chiropractor, as I mentioned. So I was running his business, helping him to train all his employees and to build his marketing and learning billing. And so I was, you know, my job, his business at night, my four kids were growing, they wanted to be in sports, and I was just worn down. You know, I had been doing it for a couple of years. And even though AIG is now a very strong, successful company, we went through several CEOs and we kept thinking our department's going to be collapsed. We were going to be sold. And my bosses kept saying, you know, we're probably going to lose our jobs this year. So I had that push of, you know, things are not going to go well. I might not have my job. What's my backup plan? And if you don't have a plan and you're just hoping things go okay, you'll never get anywhere. So I realized my backup plan was I've redone all of my 12 units. I'm now making decent income. I've now got, you know, a couple $100,000 worth in equity because thankfully a bottom right. I had read books on forcing appreciation and knew kind of what I needed to do. I went to my bank that had said no to an equity line several times and they said yes. So I said, okay, great. So I decided once I knew that banks would lend to me again and I could get an equity line of credit or I could refinance these properties, then I knew I had capital. Then I knew I could do something if I had the money. Oh. And I had the ability to finance. And when I went to my very first meeting, and I don't even remember what they were talking about, but I had read lots of books that told you, you know, you can buy on seller financing or you can buy on lease options. And I understood the concepts, but I hadn't done it. Yeah. And when the very first person I approached agreed to sell me a four unit on owner financing at very reasonable terms with almost no money down, I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So it wasn't for naught that I learned this stuff. Now I just have to put it in practice. And a week later, I contacted another guy that I knew was retiring and said, hey, I'd be interested in buying your property. And I basically got three properties in 3 months that were multifamily in 3 months. And it just gave me the confidence that even if I didn't have a ton of money, between the banks offering me line of credits, these couple of landlords giving me owner financing on multi-units that I was able to buy based on their current operations, I knew that I'd be able to continue to grow through equity. And so I rehabbed all of the units. I raised the values of those properties. I cashed out again, and I took that money to buy another one and buy another one. And so it just kind of gave me the confidence that, you know what, I can do this. And even though I'm tired, even though I've got four kids and I'm still helping with my husband's business, if we just put in the hard work now, in 4 or 5 years, I knew I would have enough to safely retire from my full-time job. And so that just really got me on the path. And really in 5 years, just to give people an idea of what is possible, so 5 years, and when I say I'm doing it part-time, you know, all four of my kids are in sports. So just to give you an example, like Wednesday night, I have four kids in four places every single Wednesday night. Most nights I've got at least two. So, you know, I'm working till 4:30. I'm grabbing them food, not always healthy, but they're eating. And then we go to their sports and I'm making calls, handling tenant issues, doing it over lunch. 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, 10 o'clock to midnight, whatever it takes, every waking moment I've got, I'm looking for deals, buying a property, handling my tenants, finding more financing, whatever I need to do. But basically in 5 years, I went from those 12 units to 60 on my own. So that's about a $5.5-6 million portfolio there. And then I was able to partner recently with some other people, with two other investors, and we just bought another $6.5 million, you know, multifamily of 73 unit. And so you can grow very quickly with just part-time effort. If you have a vision, you have a plan, you understand the numbers, and you're willing to do something small every single day to execute until you execute that plan. So it's really all about time and finding funds, and really just playing to what you know, and executing every single day. So it's not easy, but it's not complicated.
I absolutely love that. And I think I'm going to cut that snippet out, and that's going to be like part of the intro, because so many people want the easy button. They want the microwave solution, and they're not willing to put in the time, and they're not willing to go through. When I hear your story, you're an absolute rock star. I mean, just having one kid is a full-time job. You have four. you're married. You have a family. You have all these moving parts. And you still made it happen because it boiled down to grit, perseverance, resilience, and everything else we've talked about, but you executed. You didn't just think about it. You had a vision, you had a plan, you put your nose to the grindstone, and you went to work. And it's
absolutely
a domino effect for you. You know, now you just partnered on a 73 unit, and then it's this ripple effect in your life and in your business. And that's not to say, by the way, that you're not going to have more challenges in the future, because that's life. But basically, sure. To overcome, you know the formula. You know what you got to do, and so that's
exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
People listening, it's no different, regardless of what they're going through. It's just having that mindset, and hopefully that was really what I wanted to convey on the podcast today. And I believe we did that, is having people listen to your story, realize that if it was possible for you with everything you've been through, it's possible for them as well. So
absolutely.
Thank you for sharing that. This is one question I typically end shows with, and I never prep the person I'm going to ask for this, but knowing what you seem like a young woman, knowing everything you know now, if you were going to rewind the clock 20 years ago, what would you tell the younger Anna? And then, by the way, this is not necessarily just business, although it can be. It could be about life. It could be about relationships. It could be about family, health, anything. Like, what's that one piece of wisdom you would impart on the younger version of yourself?
I think I would just remind myself that life continually throws challenges at you, and your life doesn't always work out the way that you envision. But if you keep faith and you don't give up and you spend much less time wallowing in your problems, like we talked about today, that you can make the best of it and that you can come out on the other side. And that really every challenge that you go through is not always going through it for the reasons that you think you're going through it, but there are always challenges that work out for your best if you just keep going, because they make us have perseverance. And when we have that perseverance and we learn that we can get through things and we can be stronger on the other end, then the next challenge strengthens that resolve to say, you know what, I've had really bad challenges and I overcame them. So let's just figure out how to get around it. Let's get creative and let's keep faith in God and in ourselves that no matter what happens, you know, we're good. We're going to make the best out of it. And so I haven't always had this strong resolve and this strong faith and this positivity, you know. It's come in peaks and valleys. But just if I had told myself earlier that there's a reason for everything and you need to have the strength and the resilience to see the good in every situation and to figure out a way to get creative to come out on the other side, that you'll have a lot less stress and anxiety and you'll succeed more quickly.
Such a powerful message. I really want to just acknowledge you and thank you for taking the time. I know, you know, you didn't know me from a can of paint, right? But I reached out to you on Facebook and you were so willing to hop on. And I don't know. I think it was God kind of leading us together, because I didn't even know your story. I just knew you were successful. It seemed like there was an alignment of core values, like I talked about at the beginning. And we had friends, and I said, I'm going to reach out to this person because I want to connect with more successful women Because like you said, it's hard to find successful women, particularly in our space. And there was just something about you, your messages, your content, what you were posting that I was kind of drawn to. So I'm glad we were able to do this. And I have no doubt that we've touched people listening to this.
Thank you so much. It's been my honor. And, you know, I've listened to some of your podcasts. I think you're doing great things. You have amazing guests on. And I would just encourage people to continue to network and to listen to other people's stories, because oftentimes we learn the most when we learn from the mistakes of others and from the successes of others, more than just, you know, putting in our own personal time or, you know, putting our head in books. So it's a blessing to be able to have other people in our network that are doing things a little bit differently that can kind of challenge us and maybe take us to the next level and make us think of some opportunities where we might be missing them.
Absolutely. So listen, I know a lot of people know you as the REI mom. I know you're a speaker, author, coach, investor, rock star mother, and everything in between. How do people connect with you if they want to, you know, just reach out, find out how they can potentially work with you or just, you know, reach out and say thank you, whatever it might be?
Sure. Great. So my email is info@reimom.com. On Facebook, I'm Anna REI Mom, and that's A-N-N-A. REIMOM. And I have a webpage, which is www.reimom.com. If you are in central Pennsylvania, I've started a women's meetup group called REI Like a Girl. And we're having a great time just talking about real estate and kind of how you do it as women and how you juggle family and the challenges that are a little bit different for women than they are for men. And then, you know, through that, you can find me if you're interested in getting into larger apartment deals. I am kind of syndicating some deals and putting people into multifamily deals, either passively or teaching them how to do it actively on their own as well.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you again for inspiring us and for sharing your message and your story. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Something tells me you and I will become friends and stay in contact and, you know, grow the relationship from here. So I'm glad we were able to connect through Facebook.
Thank you. I look forward to that. And it's all my pleasure. Thank you.
And by the way, thank you for fighting through some of these internet connection challenges I'm having. But I appreciate you, Anna.
No problem.
All right.
Thank you so much. I'm honored. At any other time you want me to come back and delve into anything else, I'm honored to do that for you.
I appreciate that. And guys, thank you for listening to another masterclass here. I look forward to connecting with you on the next one. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.